Good evening, everybody. Welcome to, I don't know why I always say good evening, because I don't know when people listen to this. It could That's be any time. Like, why do I do that?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Oh, hello would be a good one.
Aloha.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway, this is episode 85 of the Weekly Wind Down. We are missing Stacy, the new age old school mom tonight. She had a new age old school mom issue. So she had her husband had got called into work. So you are stuck with me, Jackie, the literary lesbian.
I almost said Stacy, the new age old school mom.
That's not how it goes.
That's not me. Stacy, the political princess.
And we are joined tonight by
Stevie McCain, the new age homeschool mom.
Oh. All right. Oh, yeah. That was like off the cuff too, man. She just thought that up right there on the spot.
And I'm not even drinking. I mean, come on.
Jeez. Maybe that's what you need to do. Maybe that's what it is.
Something about tea. That's right.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of tea. I mean, I like Long Island iced teas. Does that count?
I drink tea all day, every day.
And you have a really, we can't do your, but I can't with you and your Starbucks order. It's too much.
If you want to come up here?
Yeah, I'd have to. I'd have to have like an IV of hot tea at all times because it's too cold.
Yeah. We just found out that it's what, negative 44 degrees up in Canada where Stevie is? Is that what it is?
No, it's warmer. It was with wind chill minus 42 earlier in the week. Now we've hit zero. So, I mean, like, it's slush and freezing rain now, which is, you know, totally par for the course.
That was a little less cold. It's just super wet.
Yeah. And buses are canceled and it's slippery and, you know, you fall on your ass just shoveling the snow. Oh, it's just Canada, Ottawa in the winter for like 6 months of the year. Everyone wants to live here.
Yeah.
No. I just changed my mind about moving to Canada just in that one moment.
Yeah, I
think that's why all the people who said they were moving here after Trump was elected, they didn't, because then they looked at the weather report and decided it was insane.
They're like my dog. They got one paw at the door and they were like, oh, no, immediately retracted it. No tracks. It's one singular paw print and then back inside.
Okay, so tonight I went up to Connecticut last weekend to work on the book that Jean Copeland and I are writing together, and she gifted me with her favorite local beer, so I thought I would drink it tonight in honor of her. It's Thimble Island Brewing Company. It's an American ale, and it's brewed in Brantford, Connecticut, and it's really good. I actually drank some the night I got home from there too, but it's got a really cool bottle. It's got like an octopus thing on the front, or maybe it's a squid. It's probably a squid. I don't know. It's not important. It's good. I'm enjoying it.
Okay, so
if you say rosé, I'm
not having rosé.
Stab you in the eye.
Okay.
What's wrong with rosé?
Thank you.
Nothing's wrong with it. She just drinks it every time.
I was on a bit of a kick for a while where I was like, I'm going to try all the rosés and let the world know what's happening.
Yes.
Basic white girl.
I went shopping with my roommate and I was like, pick something out for me that like seems interesting. So she, because I was like, if not, I'm going to get a rosé. So she found this wine that she thought looked fun because it had like a paper bag. Like, instead of a label, it has like a paper bag on it, basically. So it's a screw top.
You want it to be a transient? Like, I don't understand.
Clearly. No, it's like a classy, like cute.
Oh, it's a cute paper bag.
Yeah. It's got a fancy castle on the front, and it's Chateau Crisp from New Zealand. It's a Sauve Blanc. It's a screw top, which I didn't realize until I got home. It says it's a 2014, but like, it's a screw top.
Maybe they could have sprung for a cork had they not wasted all their money on bags.
Perhaps. So I just have to read this because it's so funny. When I opened it, it literally popped a little bit when I like twisted off the screw cap. And Emily was like, is it carbonated? And I was like, I don't think so because it's a Sauve Blanc. Like, I don't know. Okay, so the label, it says at the top, sometimes there are perks to being a wallflower.
Oh, Jesus.
And wallflowers capitalized.
So it's like a Trump tweet?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just randomly
capitalizing things? Okay. Got it.
That's just the case with Chateau Crisp, which we've designed to be as attractive to the palate as it is adaptable.
No.
Yeah. Our Sauvignon Blanc dutifully complements any scene, whether it's staged at a friend's cocktail party or on the couch with Chinese leftovers. In other words, Chateau Crisp plays a supporting role so you can be the real star. Everyone has heard of boldly flavored wines and bright wines, complex wines and clean wines, but a wine with all of the properties of a chameleon?
Basically, now, they're saying our wine's shitty enough that no one will want to talk about it. Like,
now, that deserves an award. Does it?
No.
Also, I don't think there's a comma. I think it says now, period. That deserves an award.
Huh.
Yeah, so it's quite the chameleon, this Chateau Blanc. It's such a chameleon, it's wrapped in a paper bag.
You got a Monday night wine.
This is a Monday night wine. And honestly, like, it wasn't cold, so I maybe put an ice cube or two in there. It's not the worst, and it was less than $10. It smells like butthole, though.
Mmm. Citrusy butthole or yeasty butthole?
Yeasty, honestly.
Stevie, how's your tea?
It's amazing. No hint of butthole.
Oh, ugh, well.
So lucky.
That should be like the bar, though. Does it smell like butthole?
You know, sometimes the smell really kills stuff because, like, it's not the worst taste, but that smell is something else.
All right, moving on from buttholes.
Quite the chameleon. I didn't even realize it was butthole.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's fine.
There's like no way I can transition that. So, Stevie, why don't you tell us about your new release that hopefully doesn't involve too many buttholes?
There are no buttholes in this book. Oh.
That may disappoint some people. I don't know.
It may, so full disclosure, this is butthole free.
Technically, there's buttholes, right? I mean, like,
not featured, no.
They're just featured. They're tertiary.
Yeah, we don't talk about them, not at all. No, there are no, let me think about it, just to be 100% sure, but no, there are no scenes in this book that describe a butthole, I am almost positive. So, Invalid Evidence is the third in the Jill Kidd mystery series, and it is the last. So in answer to maybe some of your fan questions, it is the last. In
that was series. Someone's question.
Because it has followed the same two characters throughout the three books, and there is kind of a strong romantic subplot to these mystery novels, but involving these two women. And I think that this was a good way to end. So Jill, who is our protagonist and the PI in the book, is called away to a Caribbean island to solve a crime in a seaquarium where a trainer has died. And her partner, Jess, originally goes with her, but then is called back home because her husband is dying. So this adds a whole bunch of different layers and backstory that we haven't yet seen from Jess's perspective and how kind of she came to be in this situation as a principal of a Catholic high school and the health issues that she's facing and in a lesbian relationship with Jill, but meanwhile still married to her husband. So yeah, it's shorter than the other two, but it was my way of saying goodbye to the characters.
No wonder you need three books to cover all that. That is some deep shit. And still, yeah, look, she did all that with no butthole, Stacey.
I know.
And no wine.
The trainer dies at is it like Blackfish? Is it like a Blackfish kind of scenario?
I did watch Blackfish. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely did my research on this one. The trainer is killed at night, though, when nobody is there to witness, and the whale is blamed. But what is interesting about it is that when Jill is doing her research on this, she's found that no female whale has ever caused a fatality. And so,
interesting.
So that's that. I'm really excited about this book, actually, because it's the first one I've ever really talked about. I tend to just write the books and then go in and sit in my office and just never discuss them and never go on radio shows or, you know, talk and do book readings and launches and things that authors do. I don't do those things. So I'm starting to do those things now with my ninth book.
You should. They're fun.
Yeah. Clearly, I've been missing out with the buttholes and with the stink.
I mean, don't that, yeah, that shouldn't be like, we can do better than that. Okay.
That's up our game.
The listeners actually did. So Kathleen wrote in a question and she said, in Illicit Artifacts, Jess loses her foster mother, Elise, and has to cope with the grief of being orphaned twice. You also added in the,
I know this confuses some people, that two main characters both have names that start with J. I will never do that again, but it's Jill who loses her foster mom.
Yeah, that's what she said. Jill loses her foster mom and has to cope with being orphaned twice. Right. It says, you also added in the twist of Elise having a second life of sorts.
Yes.
Did you know you were going to do this going into the book, or did you know when you wrote Uncatholic Behavior? Also, did you give Jill more depth for an additional plot element?
Did I give her more depth?
Yeah.
I heard debt.
Depth.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't recall her having debt, although the mortgage probably counts. So I have a difficult time writing mysteries. I wrote most of Uncatholic Conduct without knowing who the bad guy was. I think I got like 3/4 of the way in before I kind of figured that out. So to me, like, the mystery kind of unravels itself. So most of the time, no, I don't really know what's going to happen. I'm a pantser, which is a terrible way to write mysteries. So now that I'm onto my third, I've definitely tried to be more of a plotter. So in Invalid Evidence, the third book, I kind of sketched it out from beginning to end, and that still didn't work. So no, the answer is probably no, I didn't know. Jill has always been a really complex character to me. And I think that the more time I spend with her on the page, the more she kind of reveals herself. So, you know, in terms of plot elements, it's just like life. There's not really a shortage if you kind of spend some time with them.
Sure.
All right. So Susan asks, Jill and Jess are pretty complex characters with lots of layers. Mm-hmm. I know authors often say that there are elements of themselves and people they know in all their characters.
Yeah.
But which of these two do you most identify with, and which is wishful thinking?
Whew. Well, usually it's the protagonist that the author identifies with the most strongly. But for me, it's always been Jessica, because of her interests and her musicality, and she has an invisible disability and all of those things. I like Jill's bravado for sure. But I'm not really like that. I'm definitely more considered and intellectual, and I'll think through a situation rather than busting down the door, which Jill would definitely do. So I think, you know, Jess is my kind of counter character on the page, and Jill is her perfect foil.
Okay, that was a very good answer.
I know.
I never know what to say when people ask me that. It always kind of throws me, because I'm like, you write what you know, obviously. So parts of all of your characters are everybody you know. But it's the number one question people you know ask you, like, which one am I? And you're like, don't.
Don't make me.
It's not all about you. And
they're going to get mad if you say none, right?
And they're going to get mad if you say which one. Yeah. Michelle wanted to know, were you trying to make a greater point about the Catholic religion when you wrote these books? I went to Catholic school and have to admit I had some pretty blatant crushes on my teachers, which made it feel more taboo. Was this the effect you were going for?
So before I became an English professor, I was in special needs in the Catholic school board. My wife and I were both in the Catholic school board, and I had to pretend I was not married to my wife, because even though Canada is an incredibly liberal country in some areas, in others, we have a lot of work to do. And in the news, you will see recently it came to light that this contract that I talk about in Uncatholic Conduct is actually legitimate. The teachers are required to sign this contract to say they will uphold Catholic behavior. They, you know, will practice X, Y, and Z values. So in my mind, in that situation, I kind of took it a step further and said, okay, what if someone actually challenged this? What if someone actually investigated this? And that was where the book was born, actually out of, you know, kind of reality. Stacey hates her wine, by the way. She just made
I'm really disgusting.
I wasn't going to call you out, but that was horrific.
That was pretty bad.
I'm like, she's talking about some deep, like, political, like, religious stuff, and Stacey's like,
and she gags again.
So you're not drinking blessed holy wine, huh? So so was it more like you, when you wrote that, you wish someone had challenged it the way that they did?
No, it was actually a bit scary. To think that someone could investigate an entire staff based on, you know, their Catholic conduct and what was, you know, what could have come out of that. And so for Jill, it's a huge conflict because she's gone in to investigate whether these teachers are upholding their contract or not. And then she ends up falling for the person that she's supposed to be investigating. So yeah, definitely highlighting a lot of conflicts and, you know, problems there.
For sure.
But then that's good because then they're flawed.
Right, of course.
You know, nobody wants, yeah. So Jamie asks, well, she first says, I just read Invalid Evidence, and it's my favorite so far in the series. The dialogue in this book seems less hurried and with a little more thought directed towards intention. I'm trying to write my own book, and I struggle with dialogue. What do you do to improve your skills?
I'm taking my PhD in creative writing right now, and my supervisor is a poet.
Oh,
and he
wow.
takes my work and takes a pen and scratches out about 90% of it, then leaves me with kind of the raw, sparse, poetic, mm-hmm. lyrical undertones. And that's what I've been left with. So whereas before, I would be, I don't want to say purple prose, but he has used that term with me before. It would be one of my flaws as a writer. And now I'm consciously trying to pare it back. So I think just 4 years of intense study was my turning point.
Do you feel like you noticed a difference, like after having that experience writing that, if she's saying that she's like seeing a change in the dialogue?
Yes. That like, makes
you feel a difference when you wrote it?
Yeah, well, it's about 40% shorter than the first book. So I don't think that's an accident. I think the plot is about the same in terms of plot points. So I guess I've learned to be a little bit more brief.
I also think one of the things that people, you know, underestimate is just if you're Jamie, if you're trying to become a better writer, the only way you're going to get better is writing, like writing and writing and writing. And like Stevie was saying, being open to criticism, and it's hard. It's hard because you put this piece of work out there and you've, you know, poured hours and blood, sweat, and tears into it. And then the last thing you want, you know, is for someone to tear it apart. But sometimes that's how you get better, because you hopefully start correcting your mistakes. I have said this on here before. The comma and I will always be arch enemies. Like the comma kicks my ass consistently, but you do improve over time with being able to write dialogue and being able, for me, I became much better at writing action scenes and stuff. So just doing it over and over and over again and kind of honing what you're doing and unfortunately being open to it is but Jamie, if you're gonna publish a book, you're gonna get criticism no matter what. So
well, and also don't underestimate the power of reading too. I mean, like, you can continue to write and continue to make the same mistakes, right? So if you look at something that you admire and then kind of dissect it and say, like, what is it about this that I find really compelling? Like, what has the author done? And then read books about writing, like Stephen King's On Writing or, you know, writing down the bones or things like that, that kind of lay it out to you, because you might not notice what mistakes you're making. I didn't notice what mistakes I was making. I still had an MA in writing and I was still making, you know, weird errors before somebody pointed it out to me. And now it's just kind of a matter of course. I write something, I submit it for editing. I've grown a much thicker skin. I mean, like, it still hurts sometimes for sure. But I mean, if you know that that's part of the process, you write, you edit, you get people to beta read for you, you edit again, and then you listen to your readers who say things like, oh, your third book was way better than your first. And you're like, well, thanks. I thought it was improving.
It's always nice to hear they're getting better. We don't want to hear they're worse.
I know. You know, oh my God, not this again. When will the series end?
Yeah.
The first two were so much better. What happened?
Oh God, wait, who said that?
No one. It's no one. There's also, when you write series, when you write a series, there's consistently mounting pressure that each book is better, because no one wants to fall flat as the series continues. So it's like, I was thinking about this today. I can't imagine the amount of pressure Margaret Atwood's on when, now that she's releasing the sequel to Handmaid's Tale, because it's become such like a cornerstone and so prolific, like, in this day and age. Oh man, if she doesn't knock it out of the park, she's gonna be right. It's gonna be hard on her. It really is. Like, it won't change my opinion about her, but it's not gonna be, you know, it's gonna be painful.
I think that's funny just how mediums are different, because with films, I feel like when you make a series of movies, people are like, yeah, well, of course, like, the sequel's not as good as the first one.
Not but with
that's
books.
True. With books, I feel like it's, yeah, there's this expectation that each subsequent installment is better than the next, or better than the prior one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never read a sequel of Margaret Atwood's either. I mean, like, she's a Canadian icon. We grew up on everything.
She's an American icon.
Written. Yeah, but she is a Canadian woman.
Yeah, we know.
We have to own her.
Yeah, you, okay.
Sorry, guys. Sorry. She's
It's all right. You also have Justin Bieber, so it kind of, you know, it evens out.
Balance.
Balance.
I thought we were done talking about buttholes. Sorry. But I've never read anything in parts by her. I've only ever read standalones. I'm not sure she's ever written a sequel, so I might have to figure it out. No.
I don't think she has.
No, I don't think she has either. And I can only read one of her books every like 2 or 3 years, because they always change my worldview so radically. I feel like I've just been turned inside out. So I have to wait a significant period of time in between each piece.
Yeah. That's even, I am not a poetry person, like, at all. And I have books by Margaret Atwood just of poetry, because I think she's such, I just love how she puts words. No one puts words together the way Margaret Atwood puts words together. Mm-hmm. The last question is from Kate. And she asked if you're planning on continuing the Jill Kidd series, or will you work on a new project? And she says, what's your dream project? What's your dream writing project look like?
Well, I have so many. One thing that I'm working on right now is a series of novellas. So sort of similar in theme to the mystery series that I've just finished, but with a bigger cast of characters and stronger romance. So each novella will have a mystery plot, but also a very strong romance plot. And I would like eventually for these to be the basis for a television series or something. Like, remember when we had the L Word? And remember how
the L Word was so good.
Like that, only in a lesbian bookstore, because it's going to be fun. So I have two of those written.
I miss the L Word.
Right? Because we need like a good lesbian community. We haven't had one. And I'm so tired going on Netflix and finding things. Oh, 1 star, 2 star. I'm like, no, someone give me a really good 5-star film or series. A series would be amazing.
The closest thing we've gotten is Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, which is great. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But, you know,
it's not the L Word.
No, it's not the L Word. So that's my dream project. I would like to finish that series and then see it on screen.
That would be fantastic. I support that.
Thank you.
Write another L Word. That would be great.
Yeah.
You are pretty passionate about curriculum in schools and queer curriculum in schools. So now that you're kind of ending this writing project, have you thought about possibly writing children's books?
So my Emlyn and the Gremlin series which I probably didn't mention before in our pre-interview. I have written a series of children's books. So my daughter Emlyn is 5. And when she was born, I was already leaping ahead and thinking about how she would integrate into school. And what if she was the only one with two mothers? And what were we going to do about it? And when I was trying to fill her bookshelf with queer inclusive children's literature, I just found that there was not much. And the books that I was finding had, you know, either the two gay parents as the focus, like Heather has two mommies, or, you know, mom and mom are getting married. And I'm like, that's it. You know, that's not something that I necessarily can see reading to my child over and over and over again as a favorite story, because the focus should be on the child and their adventures. And, you know, the mothers are just in the background where they belong. So I wrote the Emlyn and the Gremlin series, which is about a little girl who has a gremlin sneak into her room at night to play with her toys and, you know, upset her jewelry box and things like that. And so it's about the friendship that develops between Emlyn and Gremlin, who lives in an orphanage underground, and about, like, their Great Dane Moose, who, you know, joins them and all of these.
So cute.
I know. So...
Oh, we're not on video, otherwise I would just show. Anyway, so I did a big publicity tour with that when it first came out. And then I just got really busy raising the kid, and we're a homeschooling family, so I don't have a lot of time for that kind of thing anymore. But I would really love to do more school interviews, especially with the new rollbacks to the curriculum that are going on in Ontario right now. I would really like to see a lot more of literature just, you know, basically available to the kids, which is where, you know, the Emlyn and the Gremlin series came from in the first place. So ideally, now that she's 5, I can spend some more time promoting those.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look at those to get some for Lincoln, because you're totally right. My son, I mean, all of the queer books are pretty much like, you're normal because you have moms and that's okay, and you're still a family and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, cool, but where are the fun kid books? Oh, that's real cute. We'll have to put that on.
That's so cute.
Yeah, we'll have to put that on. But it's not the fun stories that, you know, other children's books
right,
encompass.
It's like an after school special kind of book, not like just a regular kid book where they happen to have two moms.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's
that
the focus.
My thought. Yes, yeah. Definitely.
That's
because
incredible.
Because I really think, even just working in preschool classrooms and with that age group and stuff, it would be nice, like you said, if there are just books like If You Give a Moose a Cookie, where the character just happens to,
yes,
you
definitely.
Know, have a different family structure. Mm-hmm. And that would be huge.
And these books go with my daughter to school. Yeah. So it's kind of a way of introducing her family. Like the characters are illustrated based on us. She doesn't have to do a whole lot of explaining. They just read the book at story time. And it's like, oh, Emlyn has two moms and a dog and a cat and whatever else, right? So, yeah.
That's fantastic. I love that. I really do. So, speaking of queer curriculum in schools, what is going on up in Canada? We all think it's this mecca of liberal, you know, inclusivity. What is going
Fake
on up
news.
There? What's going on up there?
So, Ontario elected Doug Ford. And probably the south of the border friends of ours are very busy with their own issues. And,
what?
And
what do you mean?
Right? I have no idea. What could
everything is good here.
Massive fire going on. And may not have noticed that we have elected, unfortunately, a similar type of personality to office in Ontario. So our premier is conservative. And rolled back a progressive sex ed curriculum that had been implemented by his predecessor, who was a lesbian and a liberal. So, unfortunately, there's been a bit of caving to certain groups who don't really want their kids learning about modern things like safe sex and consent. and so there's been a lot of pushback about that. And there's been some protests and other things going on.
I don't understand, and not obviously just in Ontario, but here too, I don't understand what the fear is of, and like you look at California, which, you know, typically leads the way in the nation, especially when it comes to LGBT rights and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they've been pretty intentional about they're not teaching like how do gay people have sex. Like
that's what I think it boils down to. There's this like, and I know we've talked about it before, but there's this, we have a tendency to sexualize
everything.
Everything in a really like weird way. And not we in general, but I think conservatives have a weird tendency of sexualizing these types of things. And mm-hmm. so I think it really is this fear of like, yeah, well, like when they teach about family constructs, because we talked about this the first time when they were introducing it in California, or talking about introducing it in California, it was talking about different family constructs. Some families have two moms, some have just a dad, some have two dads, some people are raised by their aunt or their grandma or their whatever. And sort of that sort of education at such a young age about just like different, there's different ways to make a family. Not like this is how people well, have sex.
It goes beyond that. It goes, California's done a pretty deliberate job of teaching about gay history too. They haven't erased yeah. queer people from yeah. the history books. They're intentionally teaching about Harvey Milk because he was such an important person in California's history. And, you know, for the first time, they're actually talking about how Eleanor Roosevelt, I mean, yep. guys, come on. Hello. Look at her. Let like she screams old school lesbian. Like anyone who thinks Eleanor wasn't, I don't have to say it. I can't bring myself to say it about Eleanor Roosevelt, but come on guys. Like, yeah. She was 100% gay. And they're finally talking about, you know, Joan of Arc in a queer sense. And they've stopped erasing LGBT people from history, which I think is really important because it shows one, it's not the most interesting thing they ever did. Like being gay was probably the least interesting thing about Eleanor Roosevelt, or bisexual right. or whatever. I mean, she did marry her cousin. But we won't get on that. But it's important to teach, especially for young queer kids who look at these people and they think that I can turn out to be something more than just being gay. I'm not just going to be, you know, mm-hmm. the cliche mm-hmm. niche for somebody. So it goes beyond teaching just, you know, family construct and sex ed.
I think that the sex ed thing too, because I was reading and it talked a lot about talking about like masturbation, that masturbation is an okay thing to do that people do, but none of it's gonna like
stop it.
Anybody how to do it.
What do you mean? That's not what they cover in class.
Yeah, so they're like, well, today we're going to talk about, yeah.
Flicking your bean.
And it's so funny because it's like, you know, just that sentence of like, that's okay. That's a natural, like, you're going to have urges that biologically, like your body is going to sort of overrule your mind. And to teach them that that sort of thing is like, yeah, that's okay. Or that it's an alternative to, because they always sort of like, didn't say it in sex ed classes, but we're kind of like, instead of having sex, you could do this, you know, those sorts of things. It's not like you go in, it's not an instructional video. Like they don't do that with like hetero like sex. That's not something they're talking about. Like they'll talk about reproduction, like the process of reproduction in sex ed. They'll talk about safe sex. They'll talk about puberty, but other than that, they're not given instructions.
But I think in the newer curriculum, there was a lot more inclusion of options
right.
that highlighted kind of alternatives for gay people. So they were right. talking but about like anal how-to. Sex. No, definitely not.
They don't
not.
Do a how-to for straight people either.
Nope. But they yeah. they need to include, you know, things that are alternative so that everybody in there is not just going, well, this is fantastic, another thing that excludes me. Right.
I mean, so do I just not get to do anything? Like, yeah. there's no sort of, yeah.
Or also, but don't I get to know how to do it safely is the issue, mm-hmm. right? Like, gay boys need to know how to have safe sex. And if yeah. nobody ever brings up the possibility of anal sex, they're not going to know how to protect themselves. And the parents that I see and the billboards that are outside, we reserve the right to teach our children about sex. I'm like, bullshit crap. You don't want to teach your
because
children
you're
about
not.
Sex. Exactly. You want to reserve the right to keep your kids in the dark. That's what your billboard needs to say. Because parents don't get to come out and protest the mathematics curriculum or the English curriculum or the science curriculum. We're not going back to creationism. I mean, like, if they taught that to my kid, not okay.
I just think it's kind of, I don't know, I think all of it's just kind of bullshit, because think of what a better society we would be in general if, like, we started in with with like board books and really, really young children's books that introduced different ways of living and different had characters that weren't just like straight white people. If we had more, you know, characters of color and characters like all of those types of things, think of just how much better it would be. And then you move into school and we're not sugarcoating history and we're not leaving out LGBTQ history. We're not leaving out African Americans. We're not leaving out all the horrible things we did to the Native Americans and all of those things. We're really talking about here's things we fucked up on. We really did. American history is not squeaky clean, you know, if we're really, really using all of that stuff. And then we are teaching in with that history. Also, we're incorporating like in sex ed, all of these different things. Think of how less fucked up adults would be. That we wouldn't be dealing with the Doug Fords and the Trumps and stuff of the world. Yeah. Well, because it wouldn't be like, I didn't know anything about any of these things and I became an adult and all of a sudden people are black and people are gay. And the whole world's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, exactly. You go out into the workforce. Wait a second. My parents said that they reserve the right for you not to exist.
Well, right. And
crazy.
The thing that I try to give parents the benefit of the doubt. Parenting's hard. Like you're given this like new tiny life and you want to do all the right things for it. And you know, you want to make the best decisions. And I like to believe that these parents, although it's nothing that I would do, have the best intentions. That's in my head where I try to approach it from. Cause I don't think anyone, for the most part, there's some real sick assholes out there, intentionally wants to hurt their children. Like they're trying to do what's right. But I think if they zoomed out for a moment and realized what they're doing is actually going to harm them in the long run, because when you don't open up their eyes to the possibilities of other, it's just like parents have no problem telling a kid, and I'm not comparing gay to, you know, being kidnapped, but they have no problem telling a kid, hey, this is a possibility. This could happen. We need to be careful. You can very well tell your child, hey, these people exist in the world. They're part of our society and you're going to encounter them. They are going to be, you know, Native American. They're going to be black. They're going to be gay. They're going to be all these things. This is the world we live in. You could be one.
Right? Like that's the salient point. These people who are just pretending that this entire other spectrum is other to them, it doesn't really help their children who then may be suffering mental health issues, not being able to come out to their parents and, you know, all that thing.
Committing suicide.
Staggering to me.
Well,
yeah.
It's just that so huge many. Denial. Like, guess what? Sometimes gay people are born into conservative Christian families.
There are. Shocking.
More often than not.
Right. I mean, it's just that, like, you can't just pretend that huge groups of people don't exist because it just sets you up for failure in adulthood.
Well, you're also talking about, and I pick on them sometimes and I don't mean to because there's certain ones of you that I love, but listen, baby boomers, you get your act together, okay? 7% of millennials identify somewhere on the spectrum of LGBT world. 7%. That's who just identify. And there's plenty who I do in a label or whatever.
Right. Like, it's not you.
No,
it's
and that's
not more
that's,
people.
That's millennials. The next generation coming up, it's going to be even greater.
But what I'm saying is I think baby boomers have this like thought process of like, oh, well, there's more gay people now than there were when I was a kid. Guess what? No.
It's the vaccines. Vaccines are creating gays.
Right.
Don't vaccinate your kids. They could be autistic or gay.
And have peanut allergies.
Oh my God.
Native American or Asian or something that's different than you.
When people try, little sidebar, when people try talking, like giving us information about not vaccinating Lincoln, they're like, oh no, it could cause autism. I'm like, yeah, but polio causes death. So like, right. I'll take my chances with autism any day because these diseases
also,
kill people. Oh, for sure.
There's no evidence that says.
Oh, 1,000%. Right. I'm saying giving
there's
them the
evidence. It was completely falsified, but we're going to ignore that.
Giving them the benefit of the doubt. I'm saying, let's pretend that what you're saying is completely true. Let's say it is. Yeah. I would still rather my child be autistic than have polio. Like those are just, that's just where I'm coming at.
The iron lung? No, No, that's not an acceptable thing.
You don't want to wheel them around so much.
God, fucking, I can't even go into anti-vaxxers, man. They get me real riled up.
Next topic, please.
Oh, yeah. Next topic. So,
gets better.
America.
Yeah, we had a measles outbreak here. I was over it because Emlyn wasn't old enough to be vaccinated yet. She was only a month old when there was a measles outbreak, and they don't get vaccinated until, I don't know if it's 6 months or I can't remember, because she's had all her vaccinations, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but she was too young at that point, and I was losing my shit.
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't. Well, Lincoln started getting his vaccinations at 2 months, and I'm not one of those parents that's like, don't put that in your mouth. Like, whatever, get germs. Like, it's gonna, now that he's completely vaccinated. But when, up until 4 weeks old, I was like, don't touch him, don't breathe on him, don't look at him sideways. Like, that's, I don't know what you have or who you've been around or whatever. Oh, yeah.
Well, but it's one of those things that's like, anything else, like, you don't get to make decisions that impact the rest of the fucking world. You just don't, you know what I mean? Vaccinations only work when everybody gets them,
or at least the majority gets them, or to protect the weakest. Yeah, like,
it drives me absolutely batshit crazy.
Didn't the CDC just name anti-vaxxers like the greatest health risk of the year?
The WHO did. I thought we were moving on to a different
Moving on. Go home, America. You're drunk. Okay.
Yeah. not in a good way.
No, not in a fun way.
Fun drunk.
No, you're like that tequila drinking asshole that's hitting on all the women who have already told you no, and then you send them dick pics anyway. That's what you were this week.
Yeah. Guess what? No one wants to see your dick pic.
Yeah, that's just a good rule of thumb, guys. Don't send dick pics. Don't ever do that.
Not even that great. Yeah.
Don't send buttholes.
Yeah. No.
Although I don't think any men listen to this. I think we only have female listeners
probably.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised. I have a lot of male readers.
I do too, because I write military. I have a lot of straight men that read.
Really? Gotcha. Well, if you're a straight guy and you read Jackie's book, can't see my eyebrow raise, but
yeah, she's definitely winking at you.
She's doing a pretty good dance.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted the new topic.
Well, we've covered Stacey being single at length on this podcast.
Oh, Stacey, are you single? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah, we need to go back and rehash your online dating shenanigans.
Okay.
We'll do it another time. Okay, between everyone freaking out over New York's updated Reproductive Health Act and the Covington boys and Nancy Pelosi, well, owning Trump, which was my favorite part of the week. Starting with the Covington boys. Look, this was such a mirror for America, because you could hold it up and everyone would see whatever they wanted to see. And I think it really comes down to, that was like a shit show waiting to happen. There was a group there that was causing, you know, issues, instigating. The Covington boys were completely, completely disrespectful to Nathan Phillips. But the bottom line is that we've talked on here before how it's super unfair that when a young Black teenager gets shot by the cops, that all of the Republicans start screaming, he deserved it. You know, he's an adult, blah, blah, blah. And now these white kids do something real dumb to a Vietnam veteran, and all of a sudden they're kids. Look, oppression does not create adults any more than privilege does. They're all kids. They're all boys. The frontal cortex doesn't develop until they're like 20. Like, they are primed to just be the very worst versions of themselves, especially when they're in like this pack. They were completely disrespectful in the fact that the adults in their lives are now trying to sweep it under the carpet and not holding them accountable is actually what pisses me off about the whole situation. Yeah. Like, nobody got hurt. It was a gross display, but no one even got punched, pushed over, like anything. I think there's much bigger things in the world going on. I think it was a really bad representation, or a really good representation, actually, of exactly what white privilege and toxic masculinity looks like at an emerging young age. And those adults in their lives continue to fail them. And you are going to raise boys who are just like Brett Kavanaugh. Yes. And if that's okay with you, and Brock Turner, right.
Yeah.
But everyone is hyped up on like the minutia of it, of, well, what did they specifically say, and who actually instigated all these? It doesn't matter. Those boys are boys. They disrespected an elder, a Vietnam veteran, and where the fuck were their chaperones? Like, when you take young boys into a situation like that, or young people in general, and you let them wear these hats that demonstrate a very clear political side, you can't then be like, they're just hats, who cares? No, you took them to a march for abortion, anti-abortion. It happened to be going on at the same time as the Indigenous People's March. If you didn't have a conversation with them ahead of time that like, hey, these are some circumstances that can arise because we're proclaiming, just as anyone would if they were wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt, you are proclaiming that this is my personal belief system by simply putting on that team jersey. And if you think there wasn't going to be any type of confrontation, you wanted confrontation then. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you didn't talk to these boys beforehand and say, hey, this is how we're going to handle difficult situations. This is how we're going to behave. This is how we're going to deal with it. It's on the parents. It's on the chaperones. Yeah. That's how I feel about it.
I agree. But I think that you're right. That is a super interesting point that, you know, when you're a young white man, you're a child.
Yep.
But if you're literally anyone else,
you're an adult.
Treat you like an adult. Yeah.
And who has a shady past.
Excuses. Yeah, it's nonstop excuses for their behavior. And the fact that, and not even just the excuses, the fact that we give them the opportunity to try and explain themselves. And we don't do that to anyone else.
Mm-mm.
Like with these young black kids, these young unarmed black men, we just shoot first and ask questions later.
We don't even ask questions later.
That's true. We just shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it, Nancy Pelosi, good on ya. I'm loving you this week, Nancy. You're taking him to task. You are.
Yep.
The last thing I wanted to touch on, though, is the misinformation that's going on about the Reproductive Health Act in New York.
It's only 6 pages long.
Yeah. Everyone who listens to us knows how we feel about abortion. We are not pro-abortion. No one's pro-abortion. We are pro-women's right to choose, so we're not going to debate that. But this whole, oh, they're going to let you abort your baby, you know, at 9 months and, you know,
until the day it's born.
No woman carries a child for 9 months and then the day before says, you know what? Fuck it. Abort it. Like that does not happen. Okay. And the only time this becomes legal that they can have these late term abortions is if the mother's life is in danger or the fetus is not viable. Okay. And I could give you a ridiculous list about women who are forced to carry their dead child in their uterus for weeks and even months after it had died because they weren't able to have an abortion in their state. And that's so wrong on so many levels. Like, these are wanted pregnancies when they get to that point. This is a horrible, horrible decision that these women and their families have to make with their God or whatever they believe in and their doctors. And that's who it should be left to. And that is what New York said, because the governor is rightfully worried that now that we have a conservative Supreme Court, they're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. And they wanted to supersede that so that women in New York would still have the availability to have an abortion. Because up until they passed this law, if they had a late term abortion, even if it was to save the mother's life, they could be prosecuted as a felon. Okay?
Right.
So,
and one of the reasons they did this was in case, because they are, like, I know Cuomo said one of the main reasons for doing this now was they're really afraid Roe v. Wade's going to be overturned. Mm-hmm. So if they can sort of establish that, because they did have a reproductive health law prior to Roe v. Wade, they wanted to make sure that it was up to date and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and would protect women. And one of the things that bothered me so much, because I did have a friend who posted an article about it from the CBN, which is the Christian Broadcast Network.
Stop so right
I
knew there.
Already I was like, okay, this is going to be nonsense if that's where you're getting your facts from. But the title of the article was "A Sad and Evil Day: New York Legalizes Abortion Up to Baby's Birthday on Anniversary of Roe v. Wade." And I was like, okay, like, how do I nicely, because I read that article, that headline, and I was like, okay, I got to read the article now and see like what kind of nonsense this is. And it literally, the only part of the law that it actually like quoted was where it says every individual who becomes pregnant has the fundamental right to choose to carry the pregnancy to term, to give birth to a child, or to have an abortion. That statement is in the part about discrimination. That mm-hmm. doesn't have anything to do with when you can have it done. And then, so the only, like you just said, the only part that actually talks about terms is the part where it said that it has a whole super long section basically about like what constitutes murder. Mm-hmm. Is that section of that bill. And it basically just said that, you know, with the doctor acting in, you know, a sound mind and all that kind of stuff, deems that the mother's life is in jeopardy or it's not a viable fetus, that that would not be considered murder at that point. So that point's legal. But I ended up commenting on it, and it's not somebody I would ever get an argument with on Facebook or anything. But I just said like, yeah, I actually read that because the headline sounds super crazy. And this is what it actually says. Like, that's a really important distinction. And I feel like if you're going to call yourself news, you should have to put all the facts in there.
What?
And that was just so, right? I know it's a weird, I know. This is groundbreaking. But if you're going
to
call yourself.
Hang on. I think you need to call the news agencies and make this really clear.
Right.
Fox News?
That one to start.
Like, I just don't get it. And if you want to still be opposed to that, because I'm not going to change her mind on, like, she's super, super pro-life. I get it. But also, like, your religion should govern how you choose to make your own individual decisions, not the law. Because guess what? Not everybody is your religion, right? So your religion doesn't get to take rights away from me when I don't subscribe to your religion. Like, that's not how any of this works. The country was founded because people, listen, I don't know if you know about this. People came here because they were escaping religious persecution. It was a whole thing. So, dear America, maybe you should learn that kind of stuff. Because we're governing everything off of Christianity at this point. And it's like, you don't get to make those decisions for other people. You don't want to have an abortion? Totally cool. I respect that opinion 100%. Don't have one. But you don't get to tell other people they can't. And so I was glad that she didn't get mad. She just like liked my comment. And then a couple other people were like, yeah, that headline is super misleading. And then somebody else did comment that we know that was saying like, I read that too, because it sounded super disturbing. And reading about it and the examples of women who were had been trying to for years to conceive, that it wasn't viable and then forced to carry them to term. Like, that's not a decision that anybody ever wants to have to make. Like, that's heartbreaking and super sad. And to take that, like, knowing that that's the basis of this law, and to take that and twist it and make it sound like people are, like you said, just day before they give birth going in and being like, nah, change my mind.
Right.
That's so disgusting for these people that are actually suffering. Like,
well, and I don't think what a lot of people realize is if it gets to the point where they need to get, like, let's say the baby has died in utero and the mother can't have an abortion because it's illegal and there'll be felons and the doctors could be prosecuted. What they do is they induce labor and they force that mother to give birth to her dead child. And yeah. I'm sorry. I think that's fundamentally, I think that's wrong.
You should have the right to choose whether or not that's something that you want to go through with.
Right. And yeah. And if you want to go through with that, then more power, mm-hmm. that is your choice. But there's so many possibilities about why a person would have to do this. We shouldn't be writing laws trying to box them in somewhere when it's such a,
But again, I don't like lawmakers being able to make decisions about that kind of stuff either. Like, that should be between a doctor and mm-hmm. their patient. Like, I don't think somebody who has really no knowledge, no medical. We all know that being a politician, like, you're taking an oath of office, but you're not taking an oath that's higher than that, which is should be completely partisan, like being a doctor is. Like, it shouldn't matter. You've taken an oath, you know, to do no harm. And I don't see how as a doctor, you could withhold some of this care and not be doing harm. And to have someone tell you at 25 weeks that you couldn't do that and you need to carry this baby to 40 weeks, that's not going to be viable, is just like, that's horrific and traumatic. And
none of your business.
Government, goddamn business.
I'm tired of debating this with you people. You don't like abortions, don't have one. You don't like gay people, don't get gay married. Like, just let everyone live their lives. Shut up. Okay. So we're going to skip what we're watching this week because we're running out of time. Well, we've ran out of time because we always run out of time. So what is... Well, it was a big week in America. What are we obsessed with this week? Stacey, what are your 14 things?
Okay. So one is just like real new because it happened yesterday. Because I got my nails done. This is going to sound so ridiculous. And my nail guy was on vacation and I was a little nervous because I knew... Like, I had a very specific look I wanted, and I went in there, and the guy was, like, super nervous about it. He kept asking to see the picture and asking the other guy for help, but they turned out so great, and I love them, and I nobody else can see them, but two of my fingers, it looks like there's broken glass in them, like, holographic broken glass, and I'm like...
Those are such straight girl fingernails.
Yeah, I learned about that. I learned about how lesbians don't do this.
Right.
Lesbians get nice nude nails. I too was at the spa and this is what I got.
Look at that.
I like it too.
You're not going to tear anybody's butthole up with those.
I just thought it was super cute how the guy was like super nervous about doing it because the guy who does nails is like the acrylic guy that everybody goes to for the crazy stuff. And he was like, okay, here we go. Like, so that was fun. He did a bang up job. So, Tim.
Who does not listen to this?
A plus work.
You got anything else you're obsessed with?
Yeah. I would also say that the thing I was obsessed with. Okay. So I'm working on a show right now and we're doing Rock of Ages. And if you're not familiar with it, don't ever watch the movie. It's super not funny. Like, I have the script for the show we're doing. It's so fun. It's won a bunch of Tonys. Like, it's hilarious. It takes place in the 80s. It's all like rock music and like, you know, whatever. It's great. The show is so, so funny. And I watched the movie with like Tom Cruise and Julianne Hough and stuff. Terrible. Terrible. Not funny. Awful.
You lost me at Tom Cruise anyway.
Oh, yeah. He's got that weird tooth in the middle of his face and the whole Scientology thing. He's got anything.
It's a Scientology thing, yeah.
Right. But have you seen that picture of him about the fact how he has a tooth right in the middle of his... Once you see it, you can't unsee it. So anyways, long story short, we're working on like costume things. We're doing stuff. There was a phenomenon in the 80s where men would wear crop tops. It is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my lifetime. Like t-shirts and stuff. And then I happen to be watching something else with Jon Hamm because Jon Hamm.
Focus.
It's part of this. And he had on his little football uniform when he was in high school. Same thing. He cut it into a crop top. Like it was a thing in the 80s where men wore crop tops. And it's the worst. The absolute worst. So that's really been bothering me for the last couple days because it's come up twice in my life that in the 80s, men wore crop tops.
Out of everything that happened this week, the fact that men wore crop tops is the worst.
Maybe not the worst, but it's almost, it really bothered me a lot. Also, last thing, I was watching lots of videos of like the Graham Norton show on YouTube. Dude, that show's amazing. The kind of stuff they can do on the BBC compared to what we can do here. Maybe it's just because we're so like prudish, but that show's hilarious. And you don't even have to watch the whole thing. You can just watch their like best of this season and whatever. It's so funny.
Have you seen Sex Education?
So good.
So good.
So good.
Another British show that shows real people and, you know, diverse situations and families.
Mm-hmm. That was actually going to be my amazing. What I was watching.
I love it. I binge watched the whole thing.
Me too.
Where's that? Where
Netflix.
Do I find that?
Netflix.
Me too.
It's but so
I
good.
It was really good. Because it went with our whole segment.
Yeah. Really good. Sex Education is so thoughtful and so well done. And it's so funny. Yeah. And they, again, there's gay characters, but they treat it as not the most interesting thing about them.
Without the music.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they have lead black characters that they're portrayed in a positive way that's not just like their token black person. Like it's really good. I am obsessed with my son. Turned 7 months old today and he's just the cutest dang thing ever. So he's getting to that age where he's real cuddly and he babbles a lot and he can sit up and he just kind of like sits up and he kind of like rocks back. It's real cute. So
I can't wait to squish him.
A few weeks. So I can't believe it's been like the longest 7 months of my life, but it's also been really fast. So I don't know how I feel about that. So
wait till he's five.
I'm just looking for if when he can wipe his own ass is like my, that'll be my yes, finally.
So around five.
God, is it going to take till five?
Well, sometimes they still need some help with some things.
I'm going to be wiping buttholes till I'm five, till he's five. Oh my God. What are you obsessed with this week, Stevie?
Well, I'm a homeschool mom, so we have these really awesome phonics cards.
Okay.
Fine. How's that going?
I'm sorry. I was trying to be really serious about it. Okay. I was obsessed with the movie A Star Is Born, and now I'm obsessed with the soundtrack. I've been taking lots of bubble baths just so I can listen to it 5 minutes in peace.
So good.
So good.
Cooper could sing like that. Like, I knew right? Gaga could sing, obviously.
Yeah.
Liard.
Yeah. And she's a classical musician, which I think is so amazing. Love it.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with keeping warm. Yeah.
Watch all of them. Watch, like, starting with the, like,
now I want to, because, like, after the ending, I was like, wait, do they all end like that? Like, what the heck?
Yeah, different ways. Yeah.
But yes, they do. Yeah, no, it was really cool. What am I obsessed with? Well, I'm trying to finish my thesis, so really I'm just obsessed with some, you know, tea and chocolate cookies and keeping awake enough hours to get the damn thing done. Yeah, I didn't prepare for this segment. I don't think I read that far down the sheet.
It's all right. It's not that serious.
Okay, now I'm going to stick with my phonics cards for a center.
Okay, I just have to say, Piper is running around my room. Like, I got her a cat tunnel because I thought, oh, she likes to burrow between things. She'll really enjoy this tunnel. She's carrying it around like it's a toy that you're supposed to carry in your mouth and just dragging it around. And then leaving it and running it and jumping like a kangaroo. Like, you know, like the cow jumped over the moon? She's doing that over my bed right now. So in case anyone wanted to know what Piper was obsessed with today. Being a maniac.
She's always a maniac. Okay. How's everyone? My beer was really good. I knew I would enjoy it. Thank you, Jean, again, for giving it to me. She was trying to pawn Shock Top off of me, too, or whatever that fruity stuff is. And I said, oh, no. She had two cases in her trunk. Yeah. Stacey, you still don't like your wine?
She's so bad. It's I keep taking sips.
You don't have to drink it.
Yeah, I didn't put it on the do not finish list. Yeah. You know, everyone should have one of those.
I mean, it's already in my glass.
You spent what, like $4 on it? It's fun. Like
less, it was 10 probably, so nothing.
Put it in a risotto, call it a day.
It's so bad, you guys. Like, if I take little baby sips of it, it's like, it's not so bad. But if I take like a regular sip like I would any other glass of wine, I cannot control my face. It instantly is like, bleh, like, it's so bad.
So don't buy any wine that comes in its own paper bag.
Right. That's just, that's a good rule of thumb.
You shouldn't have to say that. I'm disappointed in myself.
How's your tea, Stevie?
It's amazing. So good. Helps me think very clearly.
And she hasn't made one face like Stacey.
No.
Wait, hang on.
There you go.
All right, Stevie, why don't you tell people where they can find you, follow you, get a hold of your new book, all that good stuff.
Right. Well, as I mentioned, I'm a bit of a recluse, but I do hang out on Facebook occasionally. You can get my book. I don't know where you can get my book other than the Bold Strokes website, which is where most people buy it.
Amazon.
I mean, or wherever books are sold. Yeah, they don't like us to say Amazon.
I know, so but I people
think,
like Amazon.
I think it's possible that you can get it on Amazon.
We've heard there's this new black marketplace called Amazon.
I thought that was my office while I was selling copies hand to hand. You can also check out... Oh, I can't show my bookshelf because this is audio only. All right, sorry, it's going to have to be Amazon, everyone.
Okay. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Have a great weekend. And we will catch up with you next week, where I think we're going to delve into the R. Kelly documentary.
Yes. But no. Yeah.
I will not be here for that.
Nah, I don't want to be here for that.
Well, me neither.
Okay. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
Bye.